Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Framework Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Ana Trujillo-Limon, joined with my other host, Jamie Hopkins. And we are so excited and thrilled to kick off the FPA annual conference with Dr. Dave Yeske. Dr. Yeske, thanks so much for joining us
today. Well, it's truly my pleasure, Ana.
Awesome. Yeah, so we're really excited to be here in Seattle at the FPA annual conference. You know, actually, Seattle in 2014 was my first FPA conference. So it's like, oh, bringing back all these memories, kind of walking down memory lane, seeing all my old friends. So I really love this conference. So what do you love most about coming to FPA annual?
Well, you know, it would be tempting on the one hand to say the learning because it's such a target-rich environment. But in reality, it's about seeing my peeps.
Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely.
It's for me, it's really a target-rich environment to see all of my friends and colleagues who I've gotten to know and have become so close to over the decades. So for me, I sleep very little when I'm here.
Oh, yeah, I bet. So I would be remiss not to mention food because Seattle has such wonderful food. And we always like to talk about that here on the podcast because Jamie is a foodie and mm-hmm. I'm not as much of a foodie, but I enjoy food a lot. So what's your favorite food?
Generally seafood. Mm-hmm. You know, I probably eat salmon 3 or 4 days a week for either lunch or dinner. Mm-hmm. I love shellfish. I love oysters. And I love Dungeness crabs.
So you are in a terrible place.
Oh, I know.
For all of that.
I know. Just... San Francisco and Seattle are similar. I mean, lots of, at least in crab season, lots of fresh Dungeness crab, lots of fresh fish.
Did you go down to the market yet here and check everything out?
No, I got in late yesterday afternoon, but I will.
Yeah, I went down yesterday, and I think on Wednesday night, I might change my plans and get an Airbnb and get some of the salmon and cook it.
Oh, nice.
I'm debating that. So, because it was awesome down there yesterday and the Dungeness crab and all of that. So, I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you're at the right place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. So, we always like to ask about your first big purchase, too. I'm curious to know what's the first big purchase you remember that was really meaningful for you?
Well, I don't know if it was meaningful, but it stuck in my mind when I was maybe like 6 or 7 years old. I ended up buying a motorized Frankenstein monster. It was like a little robot, and its arms would open and close, and it would bend at the waist. You could actually pick things up with a little remote control. It was a wired remote control.
Fantastic.
This was a long time ago. Before Bluetooth.
Were you a big horror fan then of like the traditional ones?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You used to watch like all the original Dracula, Werewolf, Frankenstein's Bride, all of those.
And then Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman and all the spinoffs. And yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I grew up as a huge horror fan. Horror and science fiction.
Jamie's a big horror fan. Big Halloween fan.
I'm a huge Halloween fan. I have a dancing Frankenstein at my house. And it's like an animatronic one. And
he like,
it plays Monster Mash.
I've seen that. Oh,
yeah. Now it's like growing up, I used to stay up late and watch those on like the Sci-Fi Channel, all the old, you know, Victor horror movies and all those. And like, yeah, Frankenstein meets werewolves and, you know, all those ones. And then my bus driver like loved all that. So I would sit in like the front row and talk to the bus driver about all those old horror movies.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah. Where I grew up in Napa and Channel 2, KTVU Channel 2. Every Saturday night, they had creature features.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Have you watched, so there's an, I'm going to draw a blank. Maybe I'll look it up while Anna's asking a question. There's a new Marvel one that came out on Disney Plus about maybe like 6 weeks ago. And they actually did it like that old like horror style. And it's a couple of the characters from the Marvel world. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, werewolves and stuff like that. And
really?
It's phenomenal. It's only about 45
minutes. I've
not seen
it.
And it's one of my favorite Marvel things that they've put out. It's so good. Yeah.
I will look for it.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun.
It's awesome. Yep.
That does sound like fun. I love horror movies. I'm not like a big one of those people who's like, oh yeah, I love classic movies and I watch all of them. I like one or two classic movies, like mm-hmm. one or two horror movies, but I do like when I find one, I really enjoy it, but I'm not a big like on genres or whatever. But Dr. Yeske, you do the most negative bandwidth, what we were talking about before we hopped on the episode. And so you've been, you know, at Golden Gate University for many years and run your own practice with your wife, Elise. So talk to us a little bit about what do you think is the framework for your success in this profession and your business at school at Golden Gate University?
You know, I think, I actually think it's been so much of the volunteer work I've done. Mm-hmm. Because I'm, you know, I really find that it feeds my battery to know that I'm engaged in a community. You know, financial planning is hard It's hard work. It's if you're doing it right.
Yeah.
And it makes it easier to know that you have a community of practice who are facing the same things and who are sharing the same experiences. And so the thing for me has been my active involvement in a lot of different realms. FPA has been probably the biggest one over the decades. And it's fed my batteries. It's inspired me. It's made me a better practitioner. It's made me a better business owner. I have to say, I hear about people who try and build a practice and practice financial planning by themselves, and I don't get it. I couldn't do that. So it's been my community, and I've connected with my community through a lot of volunteerism over the years.
That's so smart. I was reading this book this morning. I'm almost done with it, but it's called Professional Troublemaker. And the author escapes me now, so I'll look it up later and share in the comments. But she was talking about the importance of building that network and your friendship network, your work network, everybody, and how it helps feed you that whole mentality of going it alone isn't really feasible for the long term.
That's right. And for Elisa and I, our friendship community and our work community, ended up merging.
Yeah. Become the same.
Well, yeah. We got married in 2006 down in Monterey, California. And I think there were about 110 people at our wedding.
Yeah.
And I think about 100 of them were financial planners and their significant others.
So is Elisa here this week?
She is.
Oh, wonderful. I haven't seen her since way before the pandemic, too.
Yeah, she'll be at the general session and beyond. So
awesome.
Well, you bring up a really interesting thing. There's a lot of husband and wife teams and spouse teams or family teams that are here, too. Mm-hmm. What's something that you learned about working in that environment that you could share that maybe you didn't know going into it?
Well, one of the things I didn't know is that we weren't going to kill each other. I mean, honestly, we started dating in 2002. We got married in 2006. We merged our businesses in 2008. And a lot of people said, well, you got married, so of course you merged your business. And my answer was, have you never been married? That was like the last reason to do it.
Yeah.
We were convinced we'd kill each other, but we gave it a shot anyway. And it turned out that we were a beautiful blend of non-overlapping interests. Mm. And so as a consequence, I got to focus more fully on the things that energized me and that I was good at. Elisa got to focus on those things that she was most interested in and most energized her. And as a consequence, I think we went exponential by coming together with all the risks that went along with that.
Yeah. When you went to merge the business, did you lay out some of those, like, I'm going to do this and like responsibilities in conversation, or did you not really do that up front?
We did a lot of that. We actually spent several years exploring the possibility of merger and did a number of staff retreats, joint staff retreats, exploring it. And we looked at those, how would it change? How would the different areas of responsibility change? And so we had some clue that was going to happen. Mm. I mean, I could remember reading my journal. I used to do a lot of journaling. And I was angsting a lot just before the merger. And, but I went back a year later, or a year and a half later, and I went through my journals and I thought, there was this thing I was obsessing about every day. QB, QB, QB. What's QB? I can't even remember what it was anymore. And yet I was obsessing about it in my journal every day. And then it hit me. QuickBooks. Because suddenly I was no longer in charge of the accounting or the financial planning or any of that. So.
Awesome. Well, I found the one. I looked it up. It's Werewolf by Night on Disney Plus. So watch that.
I will do that.
I'm gonna look up the other one. What's the name of the book?
It's called Professional Troublemaker.
Okay, I'm gonna find it.
Yeah, Lovey is her first. Like, she calls herself Lovey, but that's short for something. I'll remember. So, Dr. Yaski, besides working as the practitioner editor with me at the Journal, what is your favorite aspect of volunteering with FPA? What has been one of your favorite roles in the whole ecosystem?
Well, just a couple of weeks ago, I finished a week as dean of one of the FPA residency programs, and that is absolutely one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, residency, which is currently offered twice a year, is an opportunity for those who have passed the CFP exam or qualify to sit for the exam to spend 6 days in an intensive casework environment where they're doing a lot of role play, they're working in teams, mm-hmm. and they're learning how to take all that technical knowledge that they've acquired during their educational program and apply it with real live clients. They learn how to develop and present financial planning recommendations that are demonstrably connected to who and what matters to the clients. And that is such an amazing transformative experience. I mean, I've been doing that for 22 years now. And starting out as a mentor, I'm now one of the deans. And you want to talk about feeding my battery. And that's true of, there were five mentors there with me, very experienced practitioners from around the country. And they all feel the same way. It feeds their batteries. One of them, John Yankee from Northern Virginia, who's a good friend of mine, he did the June residency. And when I'm preparing for the October one, I said, John, I'm so sorry that you know, you did June, because I would have invited you to October. He said, I can do it twice a year.
That's how good it is. Yeah. So Dr. Yeski, I also was wanting to get your input on some, you know, some trends you've noticed in the profession. You know, we've coming out of this pandemic that we're still kind of in, and then heading into the future. So both, you know, what have you noticed over the last, like, say, 5 years? And then what do you foresee for the next 5 years, some changes in the profession?
Well, I think one of the biggest changes is something that some of us have been working on since 1995, acknowledging the interior dimension as an essential and necessary component of the financial planning process. But, you know, of course, CFP Board last year added a new knowledge domain, psychology of financial planning. And I told Kevin Keller, I said, well, you know, it's about time. You're way behind the curve. Of course, it's their job to be behind the curve, right? They follow along and they codify what's emerging within the profession.
Yep.
But it's now become, I think, unambiguously clear to everyone that the quantitative part of what we do as financial planners is honestly the easy part. Mm-hmm. It's various applications of time value of money concepts, 9 times out of 10. But change is hard. Human beings struggle with change. And the only way that we're going to be able to actually help our clients change their lives, achieve their goals, adapt to external challenges that they face, is if we understand human behavior. And if we understand how to go deep with them, and how to get down to what matters, and then help them actually modify their behavior. That's hard. It requires a specialized skill set. That skill set is now sort of being identified and quantified, and it's becoming a formal part of our body of knowledge. You know, we've been teaching it for many years at Golden Gate University. It's been a big part of our program. But even though that's been emerging for the last couple of decades, and even though it's now been codified by CFP Board, I think we have a long ways to go for financial planners to really feel comfortable operating in that deep behavioral domain. But it's the only way they're going to be effective practitioners. It's the only way they're going to be effective change agents. Is to embrace the need, and then embrace the tools, the skills, go deep within themselves. You have to do your reps. Mm-hmm. You know, you can only go as deep with your clients as you've gone with yourself. So it also requires very much experiential learning, which is what residency is all about, for example.
Yeah.
We had Dr. Jen Gongola over at an event yesterday that we were doing on retirement planning. And she's a behavioral researcher. And one thing that I find really interesting from her is she's like, she's kind of stopped paying attention to like the financial world of behavioral finance, because she's like, it's a game of telephone that like research occurs really yeah. far over here. And then it gets passed like 5 times over to our world. And we're like, kind of right. But it's not clear that like what we took from there is actually driving the behavior that we think it's going to drive. We haven't really learned enough there. It's kind of like, as you said, it's been developing for decades, but we're also, Daniel Crosby says this a lot, that we're just in that like we kind of know it exists phase, right? Like we know it's there, but we're not 100% sure, like, is this word better or this word, or, you know, what type of choice architecture? And then there was that brief period of time where it was like, remove all emotions from your financial world, right? And then now it's, well, we can't do that because that creates really bad outcomes, right? And it's this ebb and flow. So it's a science, but we just don't know it all yet, which I think is super interesting too, to see that develop.
Well, it's an interesting time for that reason. But you can't remove emotion, because emotion is a necessary component of decision making and even more importantly, action. Mm-hmm. If there isn't if you don't understand the emotional component, then you won't actually be able to spur people to action. And you know, generally people, I mean, our role as financial planners is to help clients adapt to change. Sometimes it's environmental change, something's been imposed on them. You know, they got an inheritance, they lost a job, they had a death in the family, they have a new member of the family. There's some external change that they have to adapt to, or volitional changes. Mm-hmm. They want to buy a cabin in the woods. They want a retirement comfort. They want to educate their kids. But in either case, we're helping them adapt to change, and we're helping them make change. And if you don't understand the emotional and psychological component of that, you will not succeed as being a coach and a facilitator.
Well, I did find your author.
Excellent. Thank you. Levy Ajayi Jones. We have to give her credit on the podcast.
We do.
This book, Professional Troublemaker. This is an amazing book. I am almost done.
I like the title.
kind of fits.
Do you have a favorite book that you'd recommend to listeners? I always love that question because books are such a great resource.
Well, I mean, a favorite book or a favorite book for a practitioner?
Both. Let's do both.
Well, so I would say, you know, from the market standpoint, Burton Malkiel's A Random Walk Down Wall Street, mm-hmm. you know, my background is in economics, and that book I've always loved because it takes some fundamental insights of market theory, and it translates them into terms a layman can absorb without like falsifying the underlying insights. You know, mm-hmm. you talk about that game of telephone.
Yeah.
You know, Malkiel manages to do it so it's accessible to any interested layman without actually like bending the truth of what economists have found. The other one I like is, I actually like Ron Carson's Proven in the Trenches. Mm-hmm. I built a business development and financial services class around that at Golden Gate University. And it was, you know, it really, for someone who's really trying to not only be a good practitioner, but build a good business, yeah. build out a practice that's actually going to effectively support them as a practitioner, that's a great resource. I like Thaler and Sunstein's book, Nudge.
Yep.
You mentioned Nudge the other, you used the word, so I'm sure you've read the book. Because I actually built a whole, Lisa and I worked on this concept of policy-based financial planning for many decades. And we actually used that as a way of like recharacterizing policies as forms of nudge, mm-hmm. simple decision rules that are distilled down from what you know about a client's decision-making style that allows for rapid decision-making in times of change. Okay. So those would be three.
Yeah. Dr. Thaler's been on the show before, so we've had him on, which was great. And he's an amazing storyteller too. Just wonderful human being. And I agree that, you know, one thing that I feel like a lot of people don't, if you've been around or you read the books, you appreciate from Ron and what he built at Carson was that he built a really good business, right? And like that's where all the practice management of Carson Coaching came around and the relationship with the FPA. Because a lot of people look at him like, oh, he's this guy that goes up on stage and he's like a visionary. But like he built a really effective business model that could support. I mean, there are hundreds of advisory firms that basically follow that process, right? That he put in place, which to me is like super interesting that he's changed all these businesses and, you know, and you said so they could actually support you and you can run it and not hate your life too, which is another
part. Not hate your life. Well, and the thing is, the thing I loved about it, it immediately resonated for me because it's about process. And I've always been about process. And if you don't systematize and processize everything you're doing, you're just not going to be able to scale. You're not going to be able to enjoy your life and be a good practitioner. You have to have a system in place that will provide consistent results. And, you know, it just resonated with everything I'd been trying to do for 30 years. And so, but I didn't write the book. So thank you. Thank you, Ron.
For sure. So, Dr. Yeski, we're coming to the end of our time here. We always really enjoy hearing people's responses to the question, what does freedom look like to you? Or what does it mean to you?
Freedom, I mean, this is going to be a really conventional answer, but freedom is about choice, about having choices, about, about designing a life that allows you to pursue the things that interest you, spend time with the people who matter to you, and allow you to just explore what it means to be human. It's freedom and choice, and you have to create that.
Yeah.
You have to create that. You know, we don't arrive with that.
Just play an active part in designing that for yourself.
Absolutely.
All right. I did this yesterday and I'd love to do two like quick questions and see if you can answer them in under 60 seconds.
Okay.
So the one is, What's one thing in the next 5 years about this profession that you don't think is going to change?
What I don't think is going to change is that I think that people are still going to be forming new practices. I think people are going to want to practice independently. I think the independent financial planner is still going to be an impulse that you're going to see playing out forever.
Okay. And the other one is, what's the best Halloween costume you ever had?
The best, probably when I was a kid and I went as Dracula. My mother made a beautiful black cape, you know, with all that had all the classic features to it. And I had the fangs, that went in the mouth. And,
bloody, yeah.
Yeah.
Good classic.
I love that. So thanks for sharing. Yeah.
Oh, my pleasure.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Yeske, for joining us on the Framework Podcast today. We so enjoy your time.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, and it was good to see you again.
Good to see you, too. And thank you, Jamie. As always, you're amazing.
I'm still here.
He's still here. That's it. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for tuning into this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode.